Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into another edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy again to be along with you live from the Auto Farm Studios. Packed show lined up for you today, a lot to get into. Specifically basketball. Yesterday on the show, we talked a lot of baseball, both on the local and the national front. Today, we're going to focus on basketball, local and national. Each week, we've been highlighting one USU Eastern sport. Today, it's women's basketball. We're going to be joined by Coach Chelsea Warburton. I'm looking forward to it, especially with everything that has come down the pipe with the NJCAA over the last little while. The most recent ruling that we're going to get fall sports in the spring, that does impact basketball. Even though it's a winter sport, it does impact basketball. So we'll talk to Coach Warburton about that, what the next step is for her as a coach of a women's basketball team. And USU Eastern is fresh off of their most successful campaign ever at the school for women's basketball. 24 wins, share the conference championship outright. They went 9-3 in conference play. So it was a great season for USU Eastern. We'll also talk about replacing some of the outgoing sophomores. I'm looking forward to it. That'll be next segment here on Drive Time Sports. Also, we'll catch up with Jamison Welsh, great friend of mine. We typically have Jamison on the show on Monday, but this week we moved it to Thursday. And I think we're going to have a fun, interesting conversation. For one, Jamison and I do not agree on the amenities for NBA players in the bubble. I am of the mindset that these guys are well taken care of and they have close to zero reason to be complaining. Jamison and I have had this conversation off the air. We go back and forth on this. And really, I feel like I have an extremely valid opinion based off experience when talking about this. My wife and I, we're Disney fanatics. We love it. We go to Disney once a year. Every other year, every 2-3 years, we'll go to Disney World. And so I've been there. I've seen what is being offered to these players. And if you've been to Disney World, you know exactly what I'm talking about. They're not staying in the value or moderate resorts. They are staying top-of-the-line luxury. The Grand Destino. That's what Rajon Rondo referred to as a Motel 6 about a week ago. They're complaining about the food that's being delivered to them. The food is coming in styrofoam boxes because it has to. I don't have any sympathy for guys staying in Disney hotels and eating steak and shrimp that's delivered to them while they're staying in a Disney resort. Jamison feels opposite on this, so I'm sure we'll get into that in just a bit. But as far as basketball itself, we're 2 weeks away from the start of the season again. It's amazing to me that here we are, July 16th. March was a long time ago. We're talking 4 months ago. That's how long it's been since we have had NBA basketball. 2 weeks away, we're going to get the Lakers, Clippers, we get the Jazz, Pelicans. I want to rank the 22 teams. At least talk about the teams that have an opportunity to win a championship, because I'm of the mindset there's maybe five teams that, all things equal, no positive tests running through and really halting a team or them having to rely on backup players for long stretches. If all things are equal, I believe there's five teams that have a legitimate chance to win an NBA championship. I would put them tier one. Then I go down to tier two teams. Those are the squads that would need some help. They would need something crazy to happen in the bubble to win a championship. And then there's tier three. You have no chance. So we're going to rank those teams, tier 1, 2, and 3. That's coming up a little bit later on in the show. Where do the Jazz fit? If you're a Jazz fan, you probably won't like where I rank them in terms of tier. I'll just be honest with you. They're tier 3. They don't have a chance to win a championship without Bojan Bogdanović. He's too crucial to that team, and there's too many issues going on with the Utah Jazz. They're tier three. There, I'll let the cat out of the bag. I don't believe the Jazz have a chance to win a championship. I believe the Jazz have an opportunity to get past the Rockets if that's who they were to get in round one. I think that's possible. Outside of that, it's over. They can't match up with the Lakers. They can't match up with the Clippers. We'll talk about that a little bit later on the show. Let's take a look at some news coming out of the NBA. Zion Williamson has had to leave the NBA bubble at the Walt Disney Resort to attend to an urgent family medical matter. And he does intend to rejoin the team at a later date. Now, Pelicans Executive Vice President David Griffin made the statement today saying, quote, "We fully support Zion's decision to leave the NBA campus to be with his family. Out of respect for the Williamson family, we will have no further comment at this time." The way this works, Williamson will quarantine for 4 days upon returning to the bubble. If he has a negative test each day, he's outside the bubble if he's gone for 7 days or less. Okay, so let me say that one more time. He's left the bubble. He will quarantine for 4 days when he returns. If he has a negative test each day, he's outside the bubble. If he's gone for less than 7 days. If he's gone for longer than a week, he would have to quarantine for 4 days if he has a negative test for the final 7 days he's gone. If he doesn't have the required testing, he'll have to quarantine for 10 days. Zion Williamson is an exception to the rule. The NBA will do everything they possibly can to get this guy back out on the floor immediately because TV ratings matter most right now. We're not talking about ticket sales because there are no fans. We are talking about TV ratings. And this guy is a TV ratings monster, and the NBA has done a great job of pushing Zion. He will not miss any time. I am fully confident on it. Outside of that, quiet day in the national sports front. There are rumors looming that we are going to get just a massive bombshell regarding the Washington Redskins or the Washington football team. They're not the Redskins anymore. Washington's football team. Something major is coming. There are rumors circulating around social media that when this bombshell hits, it's going to include former coach Jay Gruden. It's going to include owner Dan Snyder. It's a very big deal. It's so big that minority owners are trying to find ways to sell the team right now. That's how bad it is with Washington. I've been waiting for this story to drop. I thought maybe we would get this story before 4 p.m. today. That wasn't the case. So we'll just play the waiting game a little bit longer. This is going to be a very interesting, to say the least, summer for this Washington professional football team. Forget about the name. That's small potatoes to what's being rumored is going to drop in the next 48 hours or so. And when it does, it's probably going to break social media. It's going to be a weird summer for Washington. We're going to break for just a moment. Local sports update is coming up. We'll also play you 60 seconds of NASCAR's All-Star Race, which took place yesterday. If you missed it, it was Chase Elliott racing his way to a $1 million payday in the All-Star Race. Now we'll play you the one-minute race. We'll condense it to you for 1 minute here on the show. We'll also talk a lot of basketball, both local and national. It's all coming up on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We're live from the Auto Farm Studios.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the...
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We've been highlighting one USU Eastern sport a week over the last month and a half here on Drive Time Sports. And we're down to the final three programs. One of those final three is women's basketball, and that's what we are going to talk about today. It was historical in 2019-2020 for the USU Eastern Lady Eagles. They won more games during that campaign than any in program history. The previous record was 23. They won 24 last season. And for the first time in school history, they earned a share of the conference championship outright as they finished 9-3 in conference play, tied with Salt Lake Community College for the one seed. We'll talk about that and more right now with our next guest, Coach Chelsea Warburton, who will be entering her sixth season at the helm at USU Eastern. Coach, it's always a pleasure. Again, thank you for the time today.
Yeah, happy to be with you.
Coach, I know it's kind of a different time. Typically here in the middle of July, we're talking about preparing for the upcoming season, getting the kids into campus. I know the jamborees typically take place in August, but we had some news that came down earlier this week from the NJCAA, and it kind of flipped everything upside down. It's going to be a different season, to say the least.
Yeah, our focus right now is getting everybody here on campus and settled in, and we'll kind of just move forward with the information we're getting. We're just excited to still be able to play, scrimmages in the fall and hopefully games in the spring. But yeah, it's definitely different for everybody involved.
It is typically the longest season for any sport. I mean, if we're talking four-year sports, if we're talking JUCO, basketball is the longest at the JUCO level, and now it's really condensed. And so you're going to have to play the bulk of your games from January into March, and so really a two-month schedule. How does this change things from a coach's standpoint, or does it at all?
I think you just change, obviously, your game prep, or I think we're just going to have to be really focused on time management and how we use it with practices and going into games. Obviously, all of us are facing something new that you have a system in place. We might have to tweak that a little bit to make it work better.
I guess the good news is everybody has dealt with this. It's not just USU Eastern. That kind of evens the playing field, I guess, somewhat.
Yeah, everybody's going to have to change how they travel, you know, what game schedules are going to look like. So it's definitely a different year.
As far as getting the kids here and getting your five, I believe it's five scrimmage games, right? That's what you guys can do here in the fall?
Yep, five scrimmage games in the fall.
So what does that look like, Coach? I mean, how do you schedule scrimmage games? Is it with squads from within the state? Can you go outside of the state? Is it just inter-squad? What are you looking at for scrimmages?
I think right now you can scrimmage with anybody inside, outside of state, depending on what your school is allowing. So we're just trying to find the best scrimmages that we can without playing, you know, the teams that we're going to be playing in the spring as well.
So obviously a lot of uncertainty, Coach, and we can talk about that a little bit later on down the road when things become a little bit more clear. But let's talk about the women's basketball program. You guys are coming off one of the most successful seasons in school history, and I know things didn't quite work out as planned at the conference tournament, but still nonetheless, it doesn't erase what you guys managed to accomplish throughout the season. How fun has it been trying to ride that momentum this offseason going into 2020-2021?
Oh, it's just been a huge push for us. It's exciting to remember and to feed off of and talk about, and I think it really helps us in the recruiting process moving forward and just energy for the program.
Are kids that you're trying to recruit, are they aware of what you guys have actually been able to build and accomplish over the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, especially the Utah kids. They're very familiar with our conference, obviously. I mean, there's three Utah schools right here that they follow closely, you know, who does what and how the conference goes. So they're familiar with how our year was and our previous years. Just improving each year has been a benefit.
We'll talk about the team in just a moment, Coach, but as you mentioned, building to this point, right? This was a process. It was a process that I'm sure wasn't always easy. I'm sure it wasn't always fun, but now you're starting to see the rewards pay off of the patience and putting things in place, right?
Yeah, there are different phases. We're still working hard and trying to maintain and even improve on what we've been doing. There's never a rest period, but it's definitely, we worked hard, you know, we built what we needed to, and now it's trying to continue to improve and just focus on what needs to continue to get better.
It's probably a tough question, Coach, but if you go back to when you took over the program, in your mind, what was the biggest thing that needed to be built, I guess? The biggest phase of rebuilding or at least getting this program to where you wanted it? What was the big obstacle that you, I guess, recognized immediately?
I don't know that it's necessarily like within the program. I think it's taking over the program as a new coach, what style and system I wanted in place or me and Morgan wanted in place, you know, that worked for us and for the recruiting style we were looking for. So I think that was our biggest, finding a system and a style that worked well for both of us.
And so basically, you had the base in place. It was just kind of twerking things.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I've coached under Coach Parr, and I loved a lot of what he did. And so we based some of off that. But like I said, off of what we were interested in and, you know, type of kids we wanted to go after.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Chelsea Warburton of the USU Eastern women's basketball team. Coach, again, coming off such a fantastic season, you guys will have a lot of returners, but you did lose some key components as well. So what's been the big focus this offseason for you guys as coaches?
We're actually back to where we're having, I think we'll end up with 10 freshmen. So, I mean, that's normal for junior college. The turnaround's pretty quick. We did lose a couple of our sophomores. Letta's moved on. We are returning the Caselyn and Kinley, who's our key players for us. They played a lot of minutes and started for us. So I think we're okay in that sense. We have great individual players, very skilled. It's just getting them all to play great basketball together.
You mentioned losing Letta. I mean, that's one of those talents that it's hard to replace. I don't know if you can replace it. I don't know if it's fair to say you look for the next Letta, but is that something that you guys expected at the end of the season?
Oh, with any of our kids, I mean, we're hoping that they're those type of players, great players. People are looking at them. It hurts to lose her a little bit, but we're excited for her and know she's going to do great in her next journey. I don't know that you can replace any kid necessarily. Everybody has their own special things that they bring to the team. We've recruited around her and, you know, for us. And like I said, some of the freshmen coming in are from the top in Utah and out of state. Just excited to see them all together.
Recruiting is such an interesting aspect to talk about, Coach, because if I talk to 10 coaches, I'm probably going to get 10 different answers on this question. But when you guys go out and recruit, you and Morgan, what exactly are you looking for? I mean, is it style? Is it personality? Is it a combination? What catches your eye when you're out recruiting?
I would say a combination. Obviously, you want the best talented kid you can find, but at the same time, we're really big on personalities and how they treat teammates and how they respond in certain situations, when they're in foul trouble or they're sitting on the bench. That's big for us. For our team to mesh, everybody has to kind of get along, and there's a lot of different personalities to make that happen. So, like I said, it's a combination for us, good players, good people.
Now, Coach, how do you sell USU Eastern?
Hey, I think it's pretty easy. I love where we're at. I love Price. I love the people we work with and the university. So to me, I mean, it's not a hard sell, and I love the coaches I work with. Coach Parr and Coach Morgan are great coaches but great people, and they just do a wonderful job of helping the program be what it is.
Over the last month and a half or so, we've been talking to a different coach each week at USU Eastern, and they've all said the same thing, that being able to offer a possibility of a four-year degree to a student-athlete has really enhanced recruiting. Have you noticed that on your end as well?
Yeah, I mean, the benefits of being an extension of Utah State has been great. Our kids are doing great in the academic side, so I think that's just a bonus. You know, the bigger and better the package you can give them, obviously, brings opportunities.
I know it is a unique situation. You've been able to work with your sister now for a few seasons. Obviously, you guys have done some great things. I mean, if you had to kind of describe what that's like to continue that relationship and continue to build a program alongside of your sister, how would you describe that?
It's hard to say perfect, but it's a perfect situation for me. She's not only my sister, but she's excellent at what she does on and off the court with the girls and just basketball mind and sense. So I'm hoping we can continue this as long as possible. It makes going to work fun every day, but we can agree and disagree and still work well together. It's been a blast for me the last couple of years.
Well, Coach, we'll jump back over to what you have to work on right now, again, with kind of weird times and the recent announcement from the NJCAA. As far as the roster going into 2020 and in 2021, do you guys still have roster spots available, or are you guys packed right now just trying to get the kids here?
We're pretty much finalized, yeah. It's working on getting everybody here and settled in and, you know, all the traveling and rules and following and just getting them here and situated is our main focus right now.
And so again, everything will begin for you guys basically middle of September, correct?
Yep. We can start, I think it's September 15th, and you have a couple month window to practice and scrimmage and kind of get things smoothed out for the spring games.
Well, I know we're going to be talking again relatively soon, Coach. I'm definitely looking forward to for a different season. Once we get rolling, we're going to be in the middle of January, which is typically go time, and you alluded to just making sure you manage the time. I mean, that's going to be the biggest challenge, I guess, for any coach.
I think so. It's, you know, getting the kids to play well together, player development, things like that, but it's just being productive with the time that you have with them.
Well, Coach, I definitely appreciate the time today. Thank you so much, and I'm sure we'll talk again real soon.
All right, thank you.
Again, that's Coach Chelsea Warburton of the USU Eastern Eagles basketball squad. Coach Warburton going into her sixth season as the head coach when we get the start in January. We're going to break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. We'll move over and talk NBA basketball. A couple of storylines trickling out. We've talked about Zion Williamson. But how do you rank the teams, the final 22 teams? I'll put them in three tiers. 1, 2, and 3. If you're tier 1, you're a legitimate championship contender. If you're tier 2, you're probably going to have some things break your way, but it's not hopeless. And if you're tier 3, you have no chance of winning a title. We'll rank some of the squads when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
The Toronto Raptors select. DeMar DeRozan from the University of Southern California.
And gets that to go. What a game DeRozan's having. He's got 29.
DeMar DeRozan, if you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscanini.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. We're going to continue to talk basketball, but we'll step away from the local front and talk NBA. Coming up in about 14 days, 2 weeks from today, we're going to have Utah Jazz basketball back here on KOL. It's been a long time since we've been able to say that, about 4 months. Got to go all the way back to March, but just a couple of weeks away from getting it back. Joining us right now to talk about what's happening inside the bubble and also predicting the teams that you must consider legitimate, we have our NBA insider, Jameson Welsh, on the phone right now. Jameson, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, not a problem. Thanks for having me, as always. Definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, I always look forward to the conversations. And again, a lot going on right now, including life in the bubble. And I'll tell you, I said this earlier in the week, and we kind of went into some detail. I have found it rather humorous to see the way some of these guys are living inside the bubble. It is truly a different time.
Yeah, I mean, you have guys that are used to, you know, five-star hotels and accommodations, or if it's not five-star, it's definitely the highest-rated, hotel in that city. That's normally how it goes. Like, I know, I'm not sure about Salt Lake, but I know Portland, they have two really nice hotels that players normally stay at. However, some websites don't consider them five stars. So it's basically like high 4 stars and up in some cities. So that's the combinations you're used to. In most cases, NBA players get the top floor, which is the floor with the suites on them. That's normally how it goes. So to go from that to go to regular rooms where people really aren't designed to stay in the rooms, you know, the accommodations at Disney World is more for like, hey, we're here to sleep, and that's really about it. You know, when you're at Disney World, you're really not interested in the hotel room. So it's basically a basic room to sleep in, but these guys are pretty much confined to these rooms. So it's different situations going on for everyone.
Yeah. Are you familiar with Disney World? Have you been to Disney World?
I personally never have. I've heard about it, but I've never gone.
Yeah, I've gone a handful of times, and I think you got to give a little bit more credit to these rooms and these hotels these guys are staying in. I mean, they're not staying at the All-Star Sports Resort. They're not staying at the moderate resorts. They're staying at the Grand Destino. They're staying at the Yacht Club. Yeah, they're not staying in the suites, but these are borderline five-star hotels. I mean, these are nice. We're talking about $400, $500 a night rooms. Yeah, it's not the suites that they typically stay in. These are pretty nice rooms, though, Jameson.
It's not what you got to remember. These hotel rooms aren't designed to necessarily stay and live out of. You know, these hotel rooms are based off of a wake up, sleep, shower, go back to the park. You know, other hotels are known for, hey, we're here for a week. You know, may have to do some work out of the room. You have space. Some people could be in here, whatever. Like, these rooms that they're in, it's not necessarily built like that. Now, I don't doubt that they're not nice rooms. I've never been, so I can't speak on it. But at the same time, it's just different having to adjust, not only just staying in the room, but you're in the room for most of the time there, and you really can't do anything else. So I understand some of the frustration, but I have more of a beef with the food part than anything, because we expect these world-class athletes to perform at a high level when their time is called. They also have to be nourished like that as well. Like, that's going to be the key for me, because you don't want the body not responding when the time comes. And you don't want that to be because of the nutrition wasn't top-notch. These are the best of the best athletes. They should also have the best of the best foods. And that, to me, is very important when you have all the money invested by both the NBA and also the sponsors. The food, the nourishment has to be top-notch to make sure these guys' bodies are able to perform.
Yeah, again, I don't believe there's been a problem with the food. I really don't. I don't believe there's been a problem. Now, I think you are correct in the sense of these rooms, the hotel rooms they're staying in, they're built for people to go to the parks. The hotels have amenities with them. And so, yes, you stay in the room. The rooms are nice. They're not luxurious. The amenities at the hotel are luxurious. And I don't know. I've seen players, they've been able to wander around at certain times, right? They can't do it freely. They have to do it at certain times. And so I get that. Food-wise, I don't think there's really anything to gripe about. And to my knowledge, the food is only going to improve from here on out. It was a different set of food for the two-week quarantine period than what they're getting once things amp up, I believe, at the end of this week. I don't know that these guys have a lot to complain about.
Because here's the thing. You have... The NBA has made tons of money over the last several years.
Yep.
All the values of the teams have gone up. These guys, again, this is the product. You have to make sure that these guys are getting top-notch food, whether they're in a quarantine status or whether they're past that, whatever it is, because whatever goes into their bodies, they need that. Now, I'm not saying they should have five-star, Michelin-star restaurant meals every day. No. However, if I see an NBA player that is, you know, used to burning 4,000 calories a day or 6,000 calories a day, I eat them with a little bit more than just a chicken breast and some pasta and a side salad. That's all I'm saying. I need more. Like, there needs to be more available at every stage of location, because now you're cheating them out of their normal process when it comes to food intake. Not saying the food, how the food looks. That's not what I'm getting at, is the portion size. You have athletes that literally require intake because they burn so much when they go to practice and work out and whatnot.
Are they being denied portions of food?
At first, yes, because you got to remember when all those plates started to come out, that was dinner. Like, that was it. It wasn't like they had multiple plates of dinner. Like, that was it. When they first got there, I think, like, Quinn Cook saw things like six wings and, like, I think a pasta and a salad. Like, that was it. It wasn't like they had multiple plates of that. So that's my issue of, like, hey, why aren't there more options? Why isn't there more available for these guys? Because, hey, like, there's an issue. If these guys' bodies break down, this whole situation, this isn't helping. So hopefully that gets fixed.
Yeah, I did see steak and shrimp on the menu, and you and I talked about that on Twitter. It's hard to complain about that, though. It really is.
The quality of both were kind of interesting, but again, more of the quantity size. Like, that's my thing. I don't think there should be a limit on how much food one can consume, especially for the activities and what they do. If they were there for a business trip, totally different situation. But when you got guys literally working out, both in their rooms, on the court, practicing, there needs to be more available.
Again, Jameson Welsh, our guest right now, as we talk life in the bubble for the NBA right now, getting set 2 weeks away from the restart of the season. Jameson, let's move on and talk about the teams that we need to consider legitimate. We did a segment earlier this week on the Lakers. I believe the Lakers' championship hopes have taken a major hit. I'm not saying you can't consider them one of the top favorites to win an NBA championship. They still have LeBron James. They still have Anthony Davis. But depth is going to be a factor, I believe, with the somewhat grueling schedule that these guys are going to be faced with. So, with that being said, let's tier these teams. 1, 2, and 3. Tier 1, you're an ultimate, absolute money, put money down. This team has a legitimate chance to win a championship. 2, things could break right. You know, maybe a couple of injuries for a team or two above you. Maybe a positive COVID test helps you out. I know that sounds horrible to say, but it's going to be unique in the sense of you just don't know who's going to be available day to day. And then we have tier 3. These teams have absolutely no chance. So let's start. We'll go in the Eastern Conference, the Milwaukee Bucks, Toronto Raptors, tier 1, correct?
Yes, you can even throw the Celtics in there.
I would agree with that. Yeah, tier 1.
Throw the Celtics in there as well. They have it. Well, it all really depends on Kimba's knee. I mean, he's been off for 4 months and he's still having discomfort, so take that for what it is. But yeah, I would say that there is a situation where they are in that top tier as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Again, at the beginning of the year, I was very, very high on Toronto. I do believe the Raptors may have some star power issues when we get down to it and games come down the stretch, but I like what they can do defensively. They're going to beat teams up. Milwaukee, obviously, if Giannis is healthy, that team is the odds-on favorite in the East. And I agree with you, throwing Boston in that category as well. Kemba's knee is a big factor. Also, when you take a look at the Boston Celtics, depth, it's something that I just mentioned a moment ago with the Lakers, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But, Jamison, I think this is a relatively deep team, and that doesn't get talked about enough when you look at the Celtics front to back.
You're correct. They are deep. However, they're not deep at the point guard position.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one position where they don't have a lot of depth at, and that can be very scary when you have the look at potential matchups. You look at potential matchup versus the Raptors in round two. A lot of people talk about Kyle Lowry. However, he's still an above-average point guard that can give people problems. But if you don't have a veteran guy that is at least halfway decent to go against him, that's a major issue. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Hopefully Kemba is healthy enough to play. But if he's not 100%, that can be very impactful because they don't have another guy they can willingly throw out there for 25 minutes a night.
Let's go to tier two, Miami and Philadelphia. That's pretty much the only other two teams in the Eastern Conference that I could consider having a legitimate chance if things were to break right. Yeah, I'm going to leave Indiana out. There's too many questions, especially surrounding Victor Oladipo. So for me, tier two, it's really small, Jamison. I'm going to go Miami and Philly.
Yeah, and I mean, you can argue Philly shouldn't be there. I mean, for the season they've had, however, They still have a certain amount of talent that can bail them out just due to the situation. But yeah, I mean, I think Philly's an interesting team. That's about right because Indiana. I mean, if Oladipo does play, then Indiana does deserve to be in this group because it's really the first two groups you mentioned and everybody else because the other tier we don't need to talk about at least. So I think you can if Oladipo plays, I would throw Indiana in this tier because they can beat anyone out east. They can also lose in the first round in five games. Like nothing would surprise me, but they can give anyone a tough series.
Let's move over to the Western Conference because I agree with you. Everybody else is tier three in the East. We don't really need to talk about them. Tier one, as long as LeBron and AD are on the roster, the Lakers have to be in tier one. I don't care about Avery Bradley. I don't really care about Rajon Rondo. Yes, that's going to hurt their chances, but they're tier one as long as LeBron and AD are on that roster. Outside of that, I really have a hard time putting anyone outside of the Clippers with the Lakers in Tier 1, and my reason is, you'd have to get through both of these teams to get to the NBA Finals, and I just don't think that's possible. So when I look at the Western Conference, I have two teams in my Tier 1.
That makes sense. I mean, Denver is probably the closest.
Probably.
Having a conversation, but without home court, I don't think they're going to be as good as they normally are because they have had road struggles since they've created this situation. So if it was a home court situation, then yeah, Denver would be a team that I'd be like, okay, you got to watch out for them. But on neutral court, not so much. They are a good team, though. They're a very good team. But tier one, I think it is the two LA teams.
Yeah, because again, and I'm not saying that it's a guarantee it's Lakers-Clippers in the Western Conference Finals. I do believe a team like Denver could upset one of those squads, but you're not going to beat both of them. I just don't see that happening over the course of a seven-game series.
So here's the thing, Jordan. What happens if someone has to leave the bubble in the series? Let's say there's a family emergency like Zion just had.
That's true.
Leave the bubble and you got 10 days. Like,
that's true.
I mean, there's so many things that are at stake here that it's hard to really project because it's a level of unknown that something's going to happen. Like someone's going to have to leave a series or someone's going to get hurt to where the matches we all thought were going to happen are not going to happen.
Yeah, that's a variable that you can't really predict. So I guess just looking at all things equal, that logic would apply, correct?
Right, right.
Tier two. Who do you have tier two? A couple of teams that could potentially get to the NBA Finals, but boy, things are really going to have to break their way like a positive test.
Man, so I think we have Denver, Houston, and OKC in Tier 2.
I would probably shorten it up even more in, say, Denver and Houston, and I'm really not even that. I'm not big on Houston. I actually think that while Utah is probably Tier 3, I don't believe the Jazz have a chance of getting to the NBA Finals. I'm curious to see how the size of Utah affects Houston over the course of a seven-game set. And so, yeah, I would throw Houston in Tier 2. I'm not real confident with that. But really, outside of, I mean, OKC, you believe there's a pathway for them to get to the finals if things were to break, right?
Yeah, I mean, because here's the thing. Like, Chris Paul, while healthy, is a really good player still. Like, still a really good player who's a very smart guy. And in close games, when the other team can't put a bigger guy on him because now they got Shea. So we got Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. You just can't put a regular 6'7" guy on Chris Paul anymore. You got to put a guy that's a little bit smaller that's closer to his size. So if Chris Paul's able to go one-on-one with the guy that's his size or close to it, I like those chances. Also, Steven Adams is still a very good player. He's maybe not worth the salary he's getting, but he's still a very good player. And, also think of it like this. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is probably the most underrated young player that we have. He doesn't get a lot of pub because of the market he's in. However, he has just turned 22. He is very good and just getting better as a player. This could be his coming out party. In certain matches, like, for instance, if they're able to get, like, Houston in round one or Utah in round one, and then they mess around and get, like, hypothetically, let's say Denver jumps to Clippers, just hypothetically, and they get Denver in round two, or let's say we might wind up with Denver round two, things can happen. Like, things can, crazy things that happen. Like, you just never know. Like, you never know how things may shake out. Nothing would quite surprise me regarding certain things. However, they have a really bad matchup with the Lakers. Other than that, I think they can give anyone a tough run just because of the way their roster is. They have some pretty good role players. They're not as deep as you would like, but I do like OKC's chance as a little puncher's chance.
Jameson Welsh, our guest again as we talk NBA basketball. You can give him a follow on Twitter at the Jameson. Hey, Jameson, it's always a pleasure to catch up. I know we'll do it again next week as we get even closer to the restart of the season. Thank you again.
Oh, not a problem. Thanks for having me as always.
We're going to break one last time. We'll return and put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports live from the Auto Farm Studios on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. We're back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Again, live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'll bring in Travis Anderson to help close out this edition. Travis, we'll go back to the conversation I just had with Jameson. Tier three teams that have absolutely no chance. We put the Jazz in that category. Do you have a problem with that?
No, the Jazz have absolutely no chance of winning a championship this year. Right. There's just too much with that team going on right now for them to weave their way through this. So, yeah, you're right in putting them in that tier where the team doesn't have a chance. They don't have a chance.
Okay, so let me ask you this. If there's no issues between Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, and Bojan Bogdanovic is healthy, do you feel that way?
Yeah, I still don't think they have a chance.
Yeah, I disagree with you there because I think that this team, when healthy, especially with everything that's going on and how different this bubble is going to be, I think it's very hard to predict which teams, top four teams that would have no chance. Look, I look at Denver, and again, this is the problem with the Western Conference. You have to go through both the Lakers and the Clippers, and that's going to be a daunting task for anyone. I don't care if it's Milwaukee. I don't care if it's Toronto. It doesn't matter which team it is.
Yeah, especially in the West, if you're a team like Denver, like you said, or Houston.
You're going to have to get through both of them.
Yeah, you're going to have to go through, the Clippers, the Lakers, and whoever else. So, yeah, it's too much to ask.
It's daunting. And then when you look at the Eastern Conference, the idea of having to get through the likes of Boston and Toronto,
Miami,
Milwaukee,
you can throw them in there.
There are teams that you can, but it is difficult to predict if all things are equal. Again, the reason I'm saying the Jazz have little to no chance is because all things are not equal with this team right now. It's truly that simple. All things are not equal. There's a major rift. You do not have Bojan Bogdanovic. David Locke was talking about this earlier today. He doesn't believe that the absence of Bojan is going to have any impact on the Jazz being able to rebound the basketball. And I disagree with that.
He's wrong.
He's
flat wrong because Bojan, I think you and I talked about this a couple weeks ago. I said he was their best player so far this year.
You could be right. How does that affect rebounding the ball? I guess statistically, if you look at next gen stats, he's not a great rebounder, but it is size. And that's the one thing that they do not have when you go up against the likes of the Lakers or the Clippers.
Now, you
could get away with that against the Rockets.
Because Bojan would, spread the floor out, and you're going to make AD come out of the paint or whoever, JaVale, and now they don't have that. So all the Lakers have to do is just pack everybody in the paint because the Jazz really don't have anybody from the outside that's going to beat you.
Yeah, when you look at the Clippers roster, I mean, they can really spread the floor out. They have some guys that can score the basketball inside. They can score the basketball outside. Size is going to be a factor for the Jazz.
They only have one scorer, and that's Mitchell.
And here's the one thing that I think is going to be difficult for Utah and Jameson to touch on this. Against Houston, you're going to have to score the basketball. Now, I still believe over the course of a 7-game set, size is going to be a factor,
And I just don't believe that this is a formula for success for Houston. I could be completely wrong, but I just don't see it.
There's no way. There's no way the Rockets can play that style and go through Utah, the Clippers, the Lakers, and get to the finals. There's no way.
It's going to do it for us. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We're out.